Not good enough. A level of play that's just not going to be acceptable. It's just not good enough. Those were Gabe Kapler's words about how the Giants played in this four-game sweep at the hands of the Dodgers in Los Angeles to start the second half. So we'll elaborate on that next.
You are Locked On Giants, your daily San Francisco Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspik, and on the show we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also simple, passionate, and accessible to all. I'm a former contributor for the baseball statistics and analysis websites Beyond the Box Score and Rotographs. I've been podcasting about the Giants since 2015, and I'm a lifelong fan. Thank you for making Locked On Giants your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Nile. Make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com, and going on now is the Blue Nile Anniversary Sale. Save up to 40% on classic fine jewelry pieces and 25% on engagement ring settings. Shop stress-free and find your forever piece. Go to BlueNile.com today. Stress-free. It's not really a characteristic I would apply to being a fan of the San Francisco Giants at this moment in time, is it? No, but yeah, I mean, it was a stressful weekend, if you can even call it that. I think stress is a little bit selling it short in terms of on the spectrum of misery, the misery index, if you're a San Francisco Giants fan. So they get swept in LA, four-game series, first time since 1995. Giants have been swept in a four-game series by LA. And it wasn't pretty. Here's the crazy thing is that in every one of these games, they technically were like kind of in a position to win. In three out of the four games, it was either tied or they had the lead in the late innings. And in one of the games, they had the tying run on base and the winning run at the plate in the ninth. And there was a bad strike three call. But despite that, it really still did feel like the Giants were the team playing the Harlem Globetrotters, and the Dodgers were the Harlem Globetrotters, just hitting the ball all over the field, out of the park, making diving catches, hits at will, big defensive plays at will, star power, just ridiculous. And then compare that to the Giants, who looked like a much inferior team. And so it remains insane that the Giants were able to hold off this team, basically this same Dodgers team, less Freddie Freeman, but they had Max Scherzer. They also had Corey Seager. And the Giants won the division last year. Over my shoulder, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see this little sign I have here that says NL West Champs for the San Francisco Giants. Well, guess what? That is not happening again in 2022. And it's only July, and we can already say that with near certainty, as the Giants are 16 and a half games back in the National League West. They're still an above 500 team, which doesn't seem like it's true, but it is. It does. I mean, they've played like a 500 team. That's what's frustrating, is that 500 teams, I remember in 2018, they were just back and forth for so much of the year, and then they ended up falling apart in the last couple months, which could happen here. I don't know. I would think that this team is better positioned to avoid that, but they play well. And you're like, come on, just keep it going. And then they play poorly and just back and forth they go. And the end result is that you're 48 and 47. The Giants, however, with expanded playoffs, they're only two games out of a wild card spot. And so that's what makes this trade deadline so interesting. And we are going to spend a significant amount of today talking about the trade deadline, talking about the Giants' defensive issues, which were, it's just unacceptable how bad defensively they've been. And when you look at some of the configurations that they're trotting out there, it's like, of course, that's not going to be a good defensive alignment. And it's a little bit baffling that they're talking about, oh, we need to improve our defense. And then you've got Yermín Mercedes in left field and he misplays a ball. And yes, he says he lost it in the sun for a brief second. And that's why he kind of came in on it. And then he had to go back. And also Mike Yastrzemski, this is a late in the game in a tie game. And I think ordinarily they would have taken him out at that point. But Mike Yastrzemski was dealing with some calf tightness, and so that's the only reason they didn't substitute out Mercedes. But still, you're starting your mean Mercedes in left field. It is not surprising that you're going to have defensive issues. And similarly, like when Tommy La Stella has been out there on the field, it's not surprising that they've had defensive issues. Some of the guys, you can make a... I mean, Flores, not a great defensive player. So this is a team that is just not athletic. They're not good defensively. They have a bunch of DH types, corner bats who are stretched even at a corner. And it's not working. And so, yeah, I mean, when we talk about the trade deadline, there was a report yesterday from Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic that the Giants were, according to his sources, exploring the market for players who would upgrade them defensively and also have a ripple effect throughout the rest of the roster, where, you know, the way I see that, you think about like Austin Slater and Mike Yastrzemski, instead of putting them in center when they're out there, if you get like a good defensive center fielder in a trade, you can play those guys on the corners. And then you've, you know, you're not having your mean Mercedes in left. You have Austin Slater or Mike Yastrzemski. Granted, those guys tend to play more right, but then, you know, Lamont Wade shifts to left. And I think it could work in that if you acquire one or two better defenders, it kind of moves everyone to a better spot. Some guys need to be moved off those corners and into the DH spot, but they have too many of those guys. There's not enough room to be starting them all. So anyway, what I wanted to say about the playoff odds or their record and their position and that they're only two back in the wildcard race is that according to Fangraphs, the Giants' playoff odds are 38%. Fangraphs has their division odds at 0.1%, so 1 in 1,000 is what that means. I think it's shocking to imagine there's any universe in which the Giants overcome a 16.5 game deficit in the division and take down that Dodgers team. I guess that scenario is maybe the Dodgers lose all three of Betts, Turner, and Freeman to injuries and the Giants just get red hot. But regardless, playoff odds, according to Fangraphs, are all based on the wild card, and it has the Giants at 38%. So 38%, mind you, is almost the odds of Juan Soto getting on base in a given plate appearance. Just the other day, it was, you know, maybe those odds are more like 40% for Soto, but 38 and 40% are pretty similar. And prior to this four-game sweep in LA, the Giants playoff odds, according to Fangraphs, were over 50%. So they lost like 12, 13, 14 percentage points via this sweep. But thankfully, if you're interested in the Giants making the playoffs, the teams ahead of them, the Phillies have lost three straight. They just got swept by the Cubs. The Cardinals just lost a game. And so the Giants are only two back. And the Cardinals are now going to Toronto, where they're going to be without Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, who can't go to Canada because of vaccination status. So that hurts the Cardinals. The Phillies have been scuffling as well. The Giants now play the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Chicago Cubs, who are two of the worst teams in the league. And I get it. Giants have not necessarily done well against some of the worst teams in the league. They lost both their series against the Reds. They've lost, I think, at least one series to the Arizona Diamondbacks. They have not had an easy time, no matter what the opponent is, but that doesn't mean just because that is what's happened, that that's what's going to continue to happen. I think if you just objectively look at this series upcoming in Arizona, you think advantage Giants, and then a four-game series in San Francisco against the Cubs, advantage Giants, and then that takes us to the trade deadline. They'll have one game against the Dodgers, start of another four-game series against LA in San Francisco on August 1st. Three more games, obviously, after that, but all of those three games will take place after the 3 p.m. August 2nd trade deadline. So these next seven games are kind of critical. If the Giants go like 1-6 against these bad teams, then you might legitimately see them shift to being sellers. But if they can go what they should go, which is 5-2 or 4-3 at the very least in these next seven games, then they'll still be in the thick of this race. And I think that there's certainly a case to be made that you make some kind of buying moves, even if that buying move is present and future oriented, which is in that report by Ken Rosenthal, he named a specific player who I actually do think makes a lot of sense for the Giants, in that it's not just a move for 2022, it's a move for 23, 4, and 5 as well. So we'll get into what that specific report was momentarily. But first, whether you're ready to pop the question or you're celebrating a milestone moment, find jewelry as unique as her with the modern convenience of online shopping at BlueNile.com. Blue Nile has simple online tools to let you choose the diamond shape, size, and clarity, as well as setting style. Blue Nile's bench jewelers will then handcraft her perfect engagement ring. Each ring is one of a kind. And to me, I love the convenience of being able to do this online, similar to now how some car shopping can be done online. It's just much preferable for me to be able to get this great customer service, but without having to go into the jewelry store. For me, that is a game changer. So make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com. And going on now is the Blue Nile anniversary sale. Save up to 40% on classic fine jewelry pieces and 25% on engagement ring settings. Plus, every order is insured, ships free, and arrives in discreet packaging that won't give away what's inside. Shop stress-free and find your forever piece. Go to BlueNile.com today. All right, as promised, we are going to talk about this specific report. We're going to talk about the trade deadline. I've started to compile a list, because every time we get, you know, we do a mailbag, there's a ton of questions asking about specific players the Giants could target in trades. And while I think that's obviously a great question, it takes a lot of time for me to scour every single roster and kind of factor in contract status and availability and blah, blah, blah. And so I started to do that over the weekend. So we'll start to dip into that a little bit. Specifically, if we start to follow the clues that are being left by national reporters like Ken Rosenthal, who says that the Giants, according to his sources, are targeting players who would be in a defensive upgrade. Rosenthal, I don't know if this is via his sources information, but or if it's just his own speculation, but he talks about center field and shortstop, and how if you, you know, get a plus defender at one of those premium positions, it could kind of slide, like I said earlier, other players who had been playing those positions and maybe are a little bit stretched there, like Mike Yastrzemski at times against a righty, will start in center. But if you can keep him on a corner and have a better defender than even he in center, it kind of has a ripple effect, and suddenly Mercedes is not playing left and he can DH, just by way of example. But Rosenthal also says a couple of things. He names a specific target. It sounds like speculation as opposed to a report that the Giants are targeting him. And he also says that the Giants are perceived to be interested in also offloading a DH type to make room on the roster. And then Rosenthal says that Tommy La Stella makes perhaps the most sense. So I'm going to kind of push back against Tommy La Stella making the most sense, not because I'm any more thinking that he must have a spot on this roster, but more so because I'm thinking that his contract is significantly underwater and the Giants would have a hard time moving it unless they took on a lot of the money themselves, and or it was part of a larger deal that involved another bad contract coming to the Giants. Maybe a guy who's a good defender, also on a bad contract, but a better, you know, obviously La Stella not providing pretty much any defensive value. But let's talk about the player the Giants were rumored, not rumored, but Ken Rosenthal threw out the name, and it's a good one. The reason I didn't actually have it on my list is because I wasn't so sure that there was going to be motivation to move him by his current team, that team being the Oakland A's. So the player is right-handed outfielder Ramon Laureano. So Laureano is an interesting guy, right? So he is known for being a good defender in center field, although some of the metrics kind of are wishy-washy on him, but certainly a good defender in a corner and possibly a good defender in center. Different metrics have different evaluations of him. This is sometimes the case, and I don't necessarily always know who to trust. I'd rather just see the guy, and I don't see him play consistently enough to be able to tell you which of them is right, but maybe it's somewhere in the middle. But there's consensus on him that he's at least very good in a corner spot in the outfield. I know that might not make sense given what I just said. You want him in center and then it moves everyone else. But let's just, for sake of this argument, say that he's good defensively in center. He's also been a good hitter. He's shown above average power. He doesn't have crazy platoon splits. And in his major league career, he's averaged about 4 wins above replacement per 600 plate appearances. Now, the thing is, he's never come close to 600 plate appearances. Closest he came was in 2019 when he put up a 4 wins above replacement season with a 127 weighted runs created plus, over 2 defensive runs above average, 5 base running runs above average, 24 home runs, and 13 steals. In 2021, he was on his way, I think, to a 600 plate appearance season, but he got popped with a PED suspension. So this is kind of the major caveat to this reported interest. I mean, we don't know, you don't know what you're going to get necessarily out of a guy who was suspended for PEDs. So he missed much of 2021 and he also missed part of 2022, but he's come back. I think he came back in May, played in 67 games, and he already has 10 homers and 9 steals. And he's been an above average bat again, even though he's kind of, he's only hitting 230, only a 311 on base, but above average power again has given him a 109 weighted runs created plus. And so the contract status, which is always so significant when you're talking about any player acquisition possibility, is interesting for Ramon Laureano. So he's under club control through the 2025 season, meaning you get him for 2022 and 3 more years after that through arbitration. And so that's why when, if you're the A's, it doesn't entirely make sense to me why you would be looking to trade a guy who's arguably your best player right now, given that they've torn down their team and you have him under club control for 3 plus seasons, 3 years plus the rest of 2022. So I'm not sure he's going to be available. I mean, of course, the A's will listen on anybody at any time, I think, especially when they're in a downturn period like they are right now. That being said, I think the cost would be pretty high. And I don't know that they want to kind of sell low, and maybe they think he can get back to being that player he was, prove that the PEDs aren't going to change the performance all that much, and then sell in the offseason or at next deadline when his value would still be pretty high given that there'd still be a lot of club control. So I don't care if it's Ramon Laureano or somebody else, but I think the concept of you're like buying in a sense because you're trying to upgrade your 2022 team, but also it's a player who would be with you for multiple years afterwards makes a lot of sense from the Giants' perspective. And the question, the big question is, what would it cost to get a guy like this? And I don't know exactly what the answer is, but certainly it's not going to cost you what a Juan Soto would cost you. And in terms of Juan Soto, we've addressed that question numerous times. And to me, and I think probably to you, if you watch these games in LA, you realize that the Giants are not one Juan Soto away from fixing all their problems. And I've even mentioned that he, according to outs above average, has been first percentile, meaning among the very worst in the game. If I don't know if you go zeroth percentile in percentiles, because they do 100th. But regardless, I mean, he's not going to fix your defensive issues. The thing about Soto is he's fluctuated between being elite and being terrible like every other year in terms of outs above average. So maybe he's just more in the middle. Maybe he's really taking it easy. We actually saw this from Bryce Harper, as he approached free agency, is the defensive numbers like went in, they tanked. And you could make a case they're trying to protect their bodies as they get closer to free agency. They're not trying to really put their bodies on the line defensively when their health is super valuable because they're projected to make a bunch of money potentially. And it's a bad Nationals team, so you're not going to give away your body saving an out when you're 30 and 65 or whatever the Nationals are. So maybe that's what's going on with Soto. But regardless, it's only 2.5 years of Juan Soto, and you're giving up elite talent, potentially elite prospect capital. There's a case to be made that you do it anyway, but also a guy like Laureano might make more sense and be more realistic because the Giants aren't just seemingly that one piece away and they don't have like the major league talent to part with and be okay. If they gave up a Logan Webb, it would just kind of sink them. Yes, you get Juan Soto, you lose Logan Webb, and I'm not sure you're in a much better position in 2022 or beyond, because you've lost your like one great major league asset. Given that, anyway, I'm going kind of off on the rails here, but the point is, I think Laureano is a very reasonable target for the Giants. There are other guys as well. As I've made this list, I've got some defense-oriented players who I think could make some sense for the Giants. So coming up in just a second, I'm going to give some other names that I think could help the Giants in 2022 and possibly beyond. We'll talk about the contract status for those players as well. Also, there was a key injury to another Giants veteran player, which has just been an ongoing theme in 2022, is the vets breaking down. But first, BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your betting needs. Find all your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. Find reviews and news of every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports wagering information, from live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts. They have you covered. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about the action happening today. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, as promised, we're going to talk about some other names. I made this list. I'm just going to run through some guys and talk about how they are defensively. Kind of changed my thinking when I heard this report that they're interested in. The thing is, like, I don't want to say defense first players or defense only players, because they've had those guys and they got rid of them. They had Mauricio Dubon. They had Steven Duggar. They traded them both. Both of them would easily be difference making defensive players on the current roster, given that nobody else really is. They would be miles ahead of pretty much anybody else right now, but they traded them. And the issue was they weren't hitters as well. Like, there's big questions about if they're going to be able to hit. And last I checked, Steven Duggar has not done well at all offensively for Texas, and Mauricio either was, I think he had a pretty good game yesterday actually, but overall, he just hasn't contributed much with the bat, which is mostly what we saw from these two in their Giants careers as well. So when I talk about Ramon Laureano, he's possibly an above average center fielder and also an above average bat who doesn't have crazy platoon splits. So a guy who could be an everyday player and give you defensive value at a premium position and be a good base runner, a possible 20 homer, 20 steal type of player. And also an intense guy. I think that's part of it too, is you look for like the right fit. And I think the Giants could use some of that, some intensity and some, you know, will to win type of intensity. And he brings that. And so he is an interesting case. But there are others. And when I look through my list, there aren't that many others who are difference makers defensively. One guy who really stands out to me, though, is Joey Wendell on the Miami Marlins. He's got a mutual option for 2023. So a mutual option means both the player and the team have to agree in order for the option to be exercised. So because the club has the choice, I consider it basically a rental, because you don't have to bring him back if you don't want to, and the player has the choice. So if he's having a good year, he can just leave and test the open market. So it's kind of a rental, and the Marlins are seemingly, I mean, they're 45-50. They just lost Jazz Chisholm to a fracture in his back, and I don't think that they probably have realistic belief that they're going to be able to contend. Maybe they want to hold off a little bit longer. Fangraphs has their playoff odds at 3% versus, again, 38% for the Giants. So Joey Wendell on a kind of rental situation has been a difference maker defensively. Outs above average, which is a Statcast metric, has him at 13 outs above average since the start of 2020. And I've kind of looked through, he's been above average at third, second, and shortstop over the last several years. And he's also hit pretty well, especially against right-handed pitching. He's more of a platoon guy. He's got a 109 overall weighted runs created plus since 2020, and consistently above average against right-handed pitching and more below average against lefties. But if you're also providing defensive value, it means you can be the type of guy, you start against a right-handed pitcher And then if you're leading, you don't pinch hit for him because he can continue to be out there and provide that defensive value. But if you're behind, maybe you consider pinch hitting for him if you need those runs to come back in the game. And that's more of the formula we saw last year, was that they had good enough defenders that they could leave guys out there. Just like I said, if it was tied or if they had the lead, they could leave their better defenders in and not pinch hit for them, like Belt and Crawford. But this year, those guys haven't been as good defensively. They haven't hit as well. And so it's just made a mess of the whole situation. But Wendell, I mean, he is an interesting possible target, and it probably wouldn't cost that much from a prospect perspective. And you do have that mutual option. So if he likes it here, Fangraphs has his contract for next year as TBD. So I don't know what the value is of the mutual option, but think of it as a rental, and he could improve the defense dramatically and move around. He could play third right now because Evan Longoria just went on the injured list again, and it provides that versatility. He could play short, he could play second. It's kind of a perfect fit in a lot of ways. He's not like a total difference maker, but if you add him, if you add a catcher, if you add Ramon Laureano, suddenly your team could be in a lot better shape. Another good defender, Whit Merrifield. The question about Merrifield has actually been the bat over the last several years. This year especially, he's just been a below average bat, but super durable. He's played all these games in a row, although I think he missed games in Canada, again, with the vaccination status. But good defender at second base and in the outfield. And maybe he strikes me as the type of guy potentially the Giants could get more out of than the Royals are if he would be brought into their kind of hitting infrastructure and maybe look to drive the ball a little bit more. I don't know. He's not a power guy, but he is a guy who's previously been quite good, and he's a good runner as well. At least the last I actually didn't like look into that as I was looking into Whit Merrifield. I was thinking more about defense. But yeah, I mean, in 2021, he stole 40 bases and was caught 4 times. This year, he's only got 14 steals, caught 3 times. But yeah, he's a plus runner, plus defender. Question is the bat, but he has a track record of at times being an above average bat. And the contract status for Whit Merrifield is he signed for $7 million this year, only $2.75 million in 2023, and then there's an $18 million mutual option for 2024. Very weird structure here, but reportedly the Royals are willing to move him, and I think that he could be a legitimate target and someone who could be brought back next year for a cheap $2.75 million. So there's probably going to be some competition for him, but probably won't be a crazy price given that he's been a below average hitter significantly this season. But you know, there's upside and defensive value and base running value to be had here. Kike Hernandez on the Boston Red Sox. Not clear if the Red Sox are sellers or buyers. They're kind of in a similar position to the Giants in that they had some good stretches this year, but they've recently fallen on hard times. Fangraphs has their playoff odds at 26%. So they're probably going to want to hold off at least until closer to the deadline to see if they can turn it around. But if they can't, he's a guy, it's a rental. He's only signed for 2022, and he's been historically a plus defender at shortstop, center field, good clubhouse guy, funny. Farhan Zaidi certainly has familiarity from his time with the Dodgers. So I think if the Red Sox decide to sell, Kike Hernandez is as intriguing a guy as anyone. The thing about him, though, is he's a strict kind of reverse or weak side platoon player. He's going to be much better against left-handed pitching than right-handed pitching. Think like Austin Slater, but with the ability to play shortstop, something like that. And then another guy, last guy I'll mention here, is Joey Gallo. Similar to Whit Merrifield in a way, the hitting has just been not good enough that you kind of sleep on him. I think the Yankees would be certainly willing to move him. It's a pure rental situation, $10.275 million this year, probably more than he's worth, perhaps, but he's historically been a good defender and he's got serious power. The issue is he strikes out a ton, but he's managed to be an above average hitter historically, despite the high strikeout rates, and he's been a good defender. So he's just a guy to keep an eye on. You know, he could certainly just be the same guy he's been with the Yankees, which is just a strikeout machine who just doesn't do enough hitting to justify being on your roster. But he's got upside. He's had some really good offensive seasons. And for being a big, tall guy, he's actually been a good defender, has a good arm, and could be an addition. So those are kind of the four or five guys I'm looking at right now. I didn't go beyond guys with 2 years of club control when I was looking at this, but of course, Laureano is a guy with more than 2 years, and I only mentioned him because Ken Rosenthal did, and I'm sure there are others out there with more than 2 years who would be fits and are good defenders, but I just didn't get to them because I was only looking at guys who are free agents after 2022 or 2023. So that's all the time we have for today. Oh, I did want to mention Longoria blew out his hamstring again, mild, but just tough to watch these veteran players struggle with either injury or underperformance, and they look old and they look slow, and they need to do something because this isn't working. So Longoria to the IL. We'll see if the Giants make a move. I think they have to. And yeah, we'll have more tomorrow. Thanks again for making Locked On Giants your first listen every day. Now make your second listen the Locked On MLB podcast. MLB expert Paul Francis Sullivan brings humor, passion, and unique perspective on every team and the biggest stories around the league. Follow the number one daily league-wide podcast Locked On MLB on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get podcasts. Once again, my name's Ben Kaspic. Check me out on Twitter at Ben Kaspic, K-A-S-P-I-C-K. If you like this show, please consider rating it or leaving a review. It helps me out a lot. So thank you in advance, and thank you to everyone who's done so already. I can't wait to be with you again tomorrow. Giants versus D-backs will have the latest. Thanks again for listening. Stay locked on Giants.